This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Equity Minds.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast that follows our journey of investing. Whether you're an absolute beginner or approaching Warren Buffett status, our aim is to help break down your barriers from beginning to dividend. My name is Bryce, and as always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you going?
I'm very good, Bryce. Great to be here again.
Always a pleasure. Big episode, Ren. Big episode.
Big episode. Yep. New financial year, and look who's back in town. Zip and Sezzle, best two performers. Here we go.
Oh, my goodness. Can't believe you still got your eyes on those stocks. Anyway, that's not what we're talking about in this episode, but Ren's obviously got them on his dashboard. Today, we're going to be covering off our thoughts on the core aspects of our portfolios, and then we're going to turn to the satellite part. We think we found the world's worst investor. We're going to touch on that. Streaming stocks have been punished. Is there an opportunity emerging there? And then, is Australia losing its perfect inflation hedge? And no, it's not gold.
No, or Bitcoin.
Or Bitcoin.
And no, the world's worst investor is not Gus in our ASX share market league who managed to turn 50K into 25K. And no, it's not me picking a stock at the start of the year.
Yeah, true. So stay tuned to find out who that may be. But let's kick things off with thoughts on the core portfolio, Ren.
Yeah.
Those out there that are indexing away, they've got a strategy, putting money into a broad-based portfolio of index funds. Where is your head at with this?
Well, last week you came on the pod and told me that you're sick of the RBA making bad decisions.
Yeah.
I'm coming on the pod this week to tell you I'm sick of thinking about the RBA.
Okay.
I just was reflecting on where I'm spending my thinking time, I guess, as an investor. And that's why we've sort of split this into core and satellite, because this is an opportunity where satellite should be dominating all of our thinking, should be dominating my thinking, because there's opportunities, so many opportunities at the moment, and it's so exciting. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking about all this macro stuff and I'm sick of it. Mm-hmm. Interest rates, inflation, commodity prices, like, you know, is a recession coming? When's a recession coming? How deep is it going to be? And I've just stopped and reflected on when we talk about core, when we talk about like dollar cost averaging into index funds, does any of this shit matter? Can I swear on this podcast?
We've had worse.
And it's like the thesis around dollar cost averaging into an S&P 500 index fund. Everyone knows that in the decades or years that you're dollar cost averaging into an index fund, there will be recessions, there will be market falls. That is, you go in eyes open about that. So why am I spending so much time thinking about it now? Like, core for me, when I started investing and when I continued investing, is all about setting and forgetting. It's not contingent on if oil is over $100 a barrel. So why am I spending time thinking about the price of oil today when I'm thinking about when I'm going to invest in index funds?
Because we run a media business in finance. No, I totally understand. I get it. And you're right. It's probably not it's not worth the brain power to be sitting there thinking about what does it matter if oil's below. From a core portfolio point of view, is that going to change how much you're putting in on a fortnightly basis into your S&P 500?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it?
Well, yeah. And you say like because we run a media business, but we still have a finite amount of – like there's an opportunity cost with what we talk about on this show. We got 40 minutes on this. We generally speak for an hour. we've got, I don't know, 3 or 4 Instagram posts a day. There's an opportunity cost there. Every time we speak about commodity prices, we're not speaking about an individual stock.
Yeah, yeah. I generally agree with you. We'll unpack whether or not the same sort of sentiment carries across into your satellite if you're not thinking about the macro stuff from it and then how that translates to a satellite perspective. Does it change at all the capital that you're deploying at the moment? Like, do you think about that at all?
In terms of that like core dollar cost averaging into index funds?
Yeah, yeah. If X is happening in the macro space, then I anticipate that we might not be, you know.
No, because I feel like every time we try and time the market, every time.
The amount of times you call the bottom in the office on a weekly basis.
I'm just trying to keep morale up, you know.
It's not helping.
People have quit professional jobs to come and work with us and they started working in the market tanks.
All I've learned from the last few months is that when you call the bottom, we're not there.
Well, am I calling the bottom now?
No. You can call whatever you want.
So look, I am obviously interested in the broader economy for a number of reasons outside of my investing strategy. And it matters, obviously. Interest rates, inflation, all of that stuff is going to have flow-on effects throughout the economy. From an investing standpoint, I'm trying to reallocate my thinking time away from trying to forecast these macro predictions because the value of them is pretty low, I think.
Yeah. Well, I also think that the type of investing doesn't relate or sort of have a good crossover with macro investing, if that makes sense. Like you're investing in index funds. Anyway, it's not like you're a Ray Dalio taking out like...
Yeah, but all Ray Dalio does is invest in index funds as well.
True. We covered that last week. Does the same approach carry across to your satellite portfolio? You know, commodity prices, that sort of stuff, does that weigh a little bit heavier on what you're buying from an individual point of view?
A little bit, but I'm not exactly running into... Like, I don't own any oil stocks, and oil has obviously done really well, but for me... The writing is on the wall longer term. Like there will always be demand for oil. Oil stocks will always have a place in the economy. But the demand now compared to the demand in 15 years, I think directionally we all know where it's going. So that doesn't really excite me when I'm trying to think long term about investment opportunities in the future. So does the price of oil affect a lot of these investments? Not really, not like long term theses. It obviously... At this point, there's a lot more opportunity and like some prices are looking pretty juicy. So I've been putting money to work. But again, like not because of macro factors, because of the companies that I like and what they're doing and why I believe in them or have a thesis around them. The macro has just given us a pricing opportunity.
Yeah. Do you think the types of companies, though, that are going to be successful over the next few years is a different set than it was?
No.
When?
Do you?
Nah. Well, from a stock market perspective, potentially, but from an underlying business, I think in 10 years' time, no.
I think like take away the euphoria of the last 2 years where like everyone fell into the trap of like stupid business models and things that didn't make a lot of sense. The companies that were the best companies or that had the best long-term prospects in 2019 probably aren't that different to the best company. The companies have the best long-term prospects in 2022.
Yeah. Long-term, I think, is the key there.
Yeah.
I think what I've been thinking about, it's just, we haven't experienced this before personally, inflation rising at the speed it has and, you know, fears of recessions and blah, blah, blah. I mean, we've had recessions, but what impact that's going to have on some of that sort of discretionary spend companies, even the Spotify's, those companies that people spend a bit of their discretionary income on. Really looking forward to the upcoming earnings seasons to see how it all starts to play out. If there's an impact now, will it be in the next 6 months? Mm. Those sorts of things is what I'm sort of thinking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's merit in macro forecasts, but I think the key thing is it shouldn't be the focus. The focus should be the next step, which is like, what are the individual companies that I can profit from in this time?
Yeah. 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 That's your opinion. There could be some people out there who...
Unless you're investing as a... If you invest in individual stocks, that should be your opinion.
Mm.
Yeah. If you're investing like in macro, if you're a top-down investor investing in macro trends,
yeah,
or you're investing in individual stocks because of top-down factors, yeah, you know, like you're getting broad exposure to oil or gold as a thematic because you think inflation hedge or energy prices, sure. But like the majority of people at least don't say that they're top-down investors. No, they say they're bottom-up, they want to invest in quality, they're looking for long-term compounders. Like they're the buzzwords that most professional investors talk about, and then most, you know, people like us who are trying to learn about investing do as well.
Mm.
And I would say that if we hear a professional investor say they're looking for high quality businesses, long-term compounders, and then spend 80% of their time writing letters about inflation outlook and oil prices, I would say, where are you allocating your time as a researcher?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're confused.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's move on to another what the moment where we think we've found the world's worst investor.
Yes.
It's a tagline that we don't throw out lightheartedly.
Well, it is incredibly lighthearted.
Well, yeah, it's not one that we are. Yeah, it is incredibly lighthearted. If you haven't heard of him, his name is Masayoshi Son. He has a net worth of $21.2 billion.
And the reason we include that is if the world's worst investor can build a $21 billion fortune, then anyone can.
Anyone can, yes. Masayoshi Son, if you're listening, A, we'd love to have you on the show. B, don't take this seriously, but...
And to be clear, he is an incredible entrepreneur.
Yes, he...
Incredible business builder.
Runs the telecom over in Japan and global investing giant SoftBank is how he's made his fortune.
Yeah. So he built a great business. He just sucks at investing.
he's raised billions and billions of dollars to invest.
The first vision fund was $100 billion.
$100 billion.
The second vision fund is $60 billion. And in both of those funds, there have been some notable investments. But the reason we're talking about him today is because he has been absolutely burnt on an investment he made last year.
Yes. It came to light that his investment in Klarna, a buy now, pay later giant over in the States, has just raised some cash. So let's have a look at the story. This last year in 2021, SoftBank, or Masayoshi Son, invested in Klarna at a $45.6 billion valuation. Incredible valuation for Klarna. This year, 2022, Sequoia, another VC firm, led around at $6.5 billion. So that's a drop in value of 86% in 12 months.
In a year.
Yeah, yeah. In 12 months. So SoftBank got in at the 45.6 and they're now worth just 6.5. Bit of a side note on Sequoia though, Ren.
Yeah, bit of a side note. So Klarna has been backed for a long time by the American VC fund Sequoia. And I think we talk about being disciplined in prices. The first 10 minutes of this episode has been me ranting about macro and micro and being price focused and the opportunities. Sequoia in 2014 led a round for Klarna at a $1.4 billion valuation. In 2019, they invested again at a $3.5 billion valuation. Then this is where the discipline came in. They sat out the 22 rounds in 2021 at a $31 billion valuation and that $45.6 billion valuation. And then in 2022, they've once again come back in and led the round at a $6.5 billion valuation. So they got in at $1.4 3.5, 6.5, but they were disciplined enough to not do the 31 and the 45.
Incredible.
And it's easy to say, well, in hindsight, of course, hindsight, like that's obvious. But think about what 2020 and 2021 was for buy now, pay later. We all lived through it, especially if you're listening in Australia. Afterpay just went crazy. Zip went crazy. There were all that long tail of other companies that listed, the Sezzles and the Lay-By and all of those. Over in America, Affirm was just smashing it. It listed. It was one of the hottest stocks of the last couple of years. Klarna was killing it. Buy Now, Pay Later was taking the world by storm. And then right at the peak, Square acquires Afterpay, and everyone thinks that the buy now, pay later business model has like well and truly arrived.
That was the top.
Credit cards were cowering in their boots. American Express was nowhere to be seen. And then all of the big guys, PayPal got in. And then
Apple now.
Well, yeah, Apple was talking about it. Now they're in it.
All the banks.
Think about being Sequoia in that moment, having fostered this company from literally from the ground up, and then in the peak of it all, seeing other venture capitalists like SoftBank take your opportunity and take percentages of the company that you could have had and diluting you, the discipline to say, no, we're right and the world is wrong, is just incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe SoftBank's a leading indicator of when of when not to get in.
Yeah, yeah.
No, so, you're right. Incredible incredible investing discipline, and it's paid dividends. Well, at this stage, it looks like it's paid dividends.
Yeah, so.
Some other instances where SoftBank have unfortunately been on the wrong side of the deal. So WeWork is probably their most notable. If you haven't seen the WeWork, We Crashed. It's on Amazon Prime, I think, or one of the streaming services. Check it out. It nods to how this all played out. But in 2019, SoftBank invested in WeWork at a $47 billion valuation. And in 2020, that valuation was cut to just $2.9 billion, so they lost 94% in a year. Again, Uber, they invested at a $70 billion valuation. Current market cap is just above $40 billion. So again, they're down 40% on that one. And Ren, WAG.
Yeah, this is my this is, I think, the funniest. WAG, if you haven't heard of it, is a dog walking app, like a two-sided marketplace for dog walkers, connecting those with dogs with those that can walk your dog for you.
Yeah.
SoftBank invested $300 million in this at a $650 million valuation. WAG announced, I think, late last year that it's going public via a SPAC at a $350 million valuation. So, again, down over 40%, almost 50% on that investment.
So, one, two, three, four rather large investments, all down well and truly above sort of 40, 50%. Poor Masayoshi Son. I'm sure he's got some successful ones in there. We've just pulled this out.
There's heaps more unsuccessful ones. He tried to invest in a company that made a robot that made your pizza as it was delivering But I figured we shouldn't spend the whole episode talking about these companies and maybe talk about some companies where the prospects are a little bit brighter.
Yeah, so it's a fascinating story. Definitely look him up and the work of SoftBank if you haven't already. But yeah, a bit of a what the moment. Poor Masayoshi Son. To give him some support, trying to deploy over $200 billion in funds. Very difficult, but that's no excuse.
I could do it.
Yeah, we could all do it.
Yeah,
successfully.
I don't feel sorry for him.
Yeah, me either.
All right, Ren. You just buy 10% of Apple and you call it a day.
True. Well, Ren, after the break, we're going to have a look at some of the streaming stocks and then also have a chat about Australia's ultimate inflation hedge and if it's broken. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
So, Ren, streaming stocks. We've got Disney, we've got Netflix. Things are changing.
Yeah, well, the headline is Disney is about to take out its March 2020 COVID lows.
Yeah.
And in March 2020, when the stock market crashed 30% in a month or something like that, Disney hit $86. Since then, it's had a pretty strong couple of years. It reached as high as, or basically reached $200, so more than doubled from its COVID lows. But it's given it all back. Market yeah. giveth and the market taketh away. It's in the mid-90s now. So it's fallen over 50% and it might be about to break the low in March 2020, which for me is astounding because what's happened since then? Disney Plus has become...
Massive.
Mm.
Parks are open.
Yeah, well, Disney Plus launched in November 2019. It's now got 140 million subscribers and... I don't know, probably will cross Netflix in the next year.
Really? That's a call?
Well, what, Netflix is 220?
220.
Yeah.
220, maybe more if they can sort out the whole 100 million households streaming it without an account.
Well, let's talk about Netflix in a sec because I got some thoughts.
Okay.
But if they cross Netflix next year or the year after, like still, it's an incredible like new asset that they've built in that time. Yeah, as you said, parks reopened. I imagine cruises are back online.
Yeah.
It's just crazy to me that the value the market is assigning to Disney compared to where the situation it was in March 2020. Sorry, and the other thing to keep in mind in March 2020 is all the cinemas were shut down as well and Disney Plus wasn't a thing.
Yeah. What's going on?
Well, I don't have an answer, but I just think like this is an example of, like, if you believed in Disney in March 2020, surely you believe in Disney now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I used to love Disney. I still do. Magical place. very magical place. I reckon it's an inflation issue. I reckon if you're going to bucket...
Consumer spending is slow and...
Yeah, if you bucket businesses that are going to be impacted by inflation, consumer spending, this is one that you're probably going to say... People aren't going to be going to Disney parks.
Yeah. Like Disney World will be the first casualty on the holiday itinerary.
Yeah.
That was a confusing way of phrasing that. People will substitute down to cheaper holidays. Yeah. But then you go the other end of the spectrum and then people can't go to Disneyland or World anymore or can't go on the Disney cruise. So they do a cheaper holiday. That doesn't change the fact that their kid still loves Disney and they're probably watching
the same
Disney movies on Disney+.
Well, this goes to the what we spoke about at the top of the show. If you've got that sort of long-term conviction.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. There's plenty of companies out there. I did have in notes to chat about Airbnb, but you can argue the same with Airbnb at the moment. They are pumping out results better than pre-COVID levels.
Really?
Yeah. They're taking on more bookings. For the first time ever, they posted 100 million bookings in a quarter. That's more than pre-COVID. Revenue. They're even on track to be profitable this year, I think.
It is so funny. Like, you just say that in isolation, just like the admiration that a company is on track to be profitable. Like, that's investing in 2022.
Think about how unprofitable they were, though.
So if you
have a look at the fundamentals of Airbnb at the moment.
Two challenges I have with Airbnb. I know we're just going on a tangent, but let's just go with it. First of all, have you noticed on Twitter the amount of people complaining about Airbnb? No. Like poor support, all of that. No. And in Airbnb's history, it used to be, the saying used to be that poor support is a feature, not a bug for Airbnb. Like they're deliberately shit at supporting their hosts and supporting their customers.
Okay.
But maybe it's just my Twitter algorithm, but yeah, a lot of people complaining. But the other thing is apparently prices now, hotels are cheaper than Airbnbs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think Airbnb are slightly changing the way that they're pitching themselves now.
Yeah, it's funny. I still would prefer to stay in an Airbnb than a hotel, even if I had to pay more, just because I think it's a better experience. But I don't know if I'm the outlier. Like, I don't know what the general customer would do.
Yeah, well, they're changing their search function very soon to show you places that you'd never have thought about staying in before. That's going to be like the lead.
What, like different? Is that the whole like I'm flexible thing where it's like?
That's what they started last year, I think, yeah. When we were talking about in the summer series, they were going to do this I'm flexible. No, this is more like they're changing their search function and algorithm to show you more opportunity and I maybe try and premiumize it a little bit more is where I'm getting what sense I'm getting from
okay.
it. Not just your classic like I need a two beddy for the weekend vibe.
But right. I'd be really interested to know what percentage of people are on Airbnb because they're just like I have a weekend I would like to go away, and what percentage of people are like I'm going to Melbourne for the weekend and I need a place. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess they can cater to both.
They definitely can.
All right, let's get back to streaming.
So Netflix.
I want to talk about their whole advertising thing and recount a conversation I had with Rowie, my housemate, previous superstar JSI guest, and I want to get your thoughts on it. So for context, Netflix is down 73%. It's lost almost 3/4 of its value from November 2021. Brutal. Mm-hmm. It's back below $100 billion market cap. To think it was once
lumped. That's sunk by the whole thing.
To think it was once lumped in with all those companies that are trillion-dollar companies.
Well, to think that it, yeah. One of the notable investors we've had on this show said that it'd be a trillion-dollar company.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get going.
So 222 million subscribers, as we spoke about before. The whole advertising thing, have you been following this, how Netflix is going to introduce ads?
Mm-hmm.
So Rowie was just saying how terrible it's going to be. And I feel like that's the prevailing feeling at the moment, that Netflix putting on ads is just stepping backwards. It's going back 10 years. I actually think it's a really positive development. And I want to defend Netflix a little bit. I don't own the stock. I don't own the company. And this is, I'm not buying it on the back of this. But the starting point, Netflix, 220 million subscribers. Call it with password sharing with accounts where you have up to, you know, X number of accounts. Call it maybe 1 billion people watching it. Do you think that's a fair assumption?
You mean like if you're saying households have multiple people?
Saying that like I have a profile on my parents' account and so do my sisters. So, you know, there's like 5 people to 1 subscription there. So
they say there's at least an extra 100 million households that are using it without a subscription.
Okay.
So like 350, call it accounts or households, and then within those households, 2 or 3 people.
Okay. So go with my 1 billion?
Maybe that's probably on the upper end, but yeah, okay. For the purposes of this, sure.
Okay. And I guess the question is for Netflix, how do they get the next 1 billion? And I think what a lot of these American subscription-based companies are realizing, or all European subscription-based companies, is that becoming truly global means they need to change their pricing structure. And the example here is Spotify. They have 420 million users and about 180 million paid users. But what they are finding is that especially in Asia, where there's just such growth opportunity, their pricing just isn't competitive. And so then the free platform is a great option because they make their money from advertising, they get people on the platform, and then they can be a lot more global.
Mm.
And for Netflix, like as a percentage of income, even when they reduce the price in a lot of these countries like India and stuff like that, they're struggling to get good subscription numbers.
Mm.
An advertiser supporter platform allows them to get into those markets. Mm. and become truly global.
Mm.
And we think about like the all these global shows that have taken the world by storm. You know, Money Heist that was made, I think, for a Spanish or a Mexican audience, taking the world by storm. Lupin was made for a local French audience, taking the world by storm. Squid Games made for a Korean audience, taking the world by storm.
Two more seasons signed.
Really?
Yeah.
These are all shows that Netflix made for local markets but became global phenoms.
Mm.
But they weren't really global phenoms because the majority of the world still isn't watching Netflix.
Yeah, yeah.
No, there's no truly global streaming provider at the moment. And I feel like that's how Netflix is trying to set themselves up with advertising to get the next billion and to create the shows that have global resonance.
Yeah.
That's sort of, I guess, why I'm pretty sanguine about the whole advertising move.
I also don't understand why people are complaining about it. Like, you're going to have the choice, as I understand it, to either pay for it and not have ads,
mm.
or not pay for it or have a very reduced subscription fee.
I think and get people. Ads. I think the concern is that Netflix will take the opportunity to say, your current subscription, you get everything, but you get some ads, and then there's a free version where there's heaps of ads, but if you want no ads, you got to pay more. I reckon Netflix will take the opportunity to jack the price up.
At the end of the day, my thing's this. Are you watching it because it doesn't have ads, or are you watching it because you have heaps of choice? And like at the end of the, like, I feel like I'd be willing to cop a couple of ads because I can watch whatever I want, whenever I want. Free TV, you don't have a choice of what you get to watch. You just get what's available
yeah.
at that time yeah. and you have to watch some ads. Sure. I think the convenience and luxury of still being able to choose what you want to watch when you want to watch it. Copying a couple of ads. Yeah.
Well, I think like YouTube is a classic example of that. I don't pay for YouTube Premium, but I pump YouTube.
Yeah.
And like the ads are annoying, but it's just like it's cost of doing business.
Yeah. I do pay for YouTube.
My time isn't that valuable.
Yeah.
You do pay for YouTube?
Yeah. I was actually thinking
doesn't
about
that just contradict everything you just said?
I guess so, but like I don't know. The reason I actually started paying for it was for music because I hated having ads in music.
True. And also YouTube, if you lock your phone, it cuts it off. But if you pay for it,
So yeah, it was a music-led thing. And now what I'm actually finding, I was thinking about this the other day, it's actually my number one watch time now.
Yeah, YouTube is easily the best platform.
It's just like I could just sack everything else.
Yeah.
Like what I'm finding on there, like the platform it is for creators to just create amazing stuff you're just like, wow, this is epic. Anyway.
Yeah, like the inbuilt monetization engine that they've built compared to the business is phenomenal.
Yeah.
That they reckon that if YouTube was split out from Google, it would be worth about and this was, I think, pre this recent market crash. But I think the number they were throwing around was about $270 billion value.
Wow.
Probably would have fallen if Disney's fallen 50% and Netflix has fallen 70%. That value will have fallen as well. But it's just incredible that Google bought it for $1 billion.
Yeah.
And they have just built another unbelievable business.
Masayoshi should take a trick or two from the guys over at Google.
Yeah. I think we all could probably that, bro. So anyway, I just want to close out the thought on Netflix because I just spent a lot of time giving the positive case. And as I said, I don't have a position and I'm not making an investment case here. This is just me speculating about the business. But I think the other challenge is that they're not the only ones who are trying to be the first truly global streaming service. Disney have an advantage here because people often forget the massive conglomerate of brands that Disney have under them, but Disney have massive presence in India. They, I think up until recently, I think they lost the rights, but they own the rights to Indian cricket, like the IPL and stuff like that. Like they are entrenched in Indian content production, and that's where a lot of these battle lines are being drawn. So I think if Netflix doesn't do it, Disney is going to have a red hot crack at doing it. You know, when we think about these streaming services, sure, they're getting smashed at the moment, but they're probably the two in the driver's seat to be truly global. Mm. And we haven't seen that in video content before, except for YouTube, I guess. YouTube. Yeah.
But even then, watch this space.
Watch this space. Yeah. Watch more content.
I back Disney.
Do you?
No, that's not advice or anything. That's just.
You just back him.
I just back him. They're a magical place.
Should we put a bet on? I'll back Netflix. First to a billion subscribers gets a tattoo.
I don't think a billion subscribers.
Yeah.
I don't. Is that
look?
That's so much growth.
Yeah. That's why I'm pretty confident making this bet. We won't be doing this.
Anyway, let's keep moving. Australia's ultimate inflation hedge has broken. No, it's not gold. No, it's not Bitcoin. It is Domino's Pizza.
Yeah, and the joke really starts in the US here because the ultimate inflation hedge around the world comes out of the US, something that has held its value better than any other asset, a Costco hot dog.
Yes. Have you had one?
Nah.
I have. They're pretty good.
Are they?
Yeah. Good onion. Yeah. Pretty good. Price for a hot dog and drink at Costco is $1.50.
And it has been that way since, I think, 1988.
Hasn't changed.
Since the 80s. Year after year. Input costs rise, labor costs rise, electricity costs rise. But Costco have kept that $1.50 hot dog and drink.
Good on them.
And we were joking that the closest thing to a Costco hot dog in Australia is a Domino's $5 value pizza.
That's it.
That has held its value for, I don't know how long they've had $5 range, but it feels like a long time.
Well, since uni days for me, that's for sure. I clearly remember them there. But yeah, the Domino's.
Who would have thought when you were at uni scamming the Domino's for free pizzas that one you would interview Don May, the CEO, and tell him that you used to scam him for free pizzas.
What a journey. But that's right. Domino's are now facing cost pressures, Ren, the $5 range under a lot of heat. But so far, the $5 value range has stuck where it is, but they've added a 6% delivery surcharge.
Yes, to deal with cost pressures. Yeah. So I think this is just an example that across the economy, inflation is hitting everyone's cost lines. And if we go full circle from where I started this episode, this is where it matters when you're thinking about, you know, the value of some of these companies. Like Domino's profit is going to be squeezed.
Yeah,
because of these cost pressures and because they're playing a category where it's hard to raise prices. Does that change the ultimate business trajectory of Domino's long term? Arguable, probably not. Like probably in 2040, Domino's won't be in that much a different position because inflation's 6% rather than if inflation had been 2%.
Mm.
But it matters. It matters in the short term. The ultimate inflation hedge has broken, but Domino's is down almost 60%.
Yeah.
And so my question for you, Bryce, is how is Domino's less worth half as much as it was worth 9 months ago?
The price has gone down. Was the valuation it was 9 months ago an appropriate valuation? What was it valued at 9 months ago?
So it's about $6.5 billion now, so call it 13 then. It trades at a 36 price to earnings now. So it was
expensive.
Hot. Yeah. But it wasn't a unprofitable tech stock, you know. This is a pizza shop, pizza franchise.
Yeah. Discretionary spending pizza franchise.
Yeah.
Is it half as valuable as it was 9 months ago? There's arguments that you could say it's definitely not as valuable. 50% drawdown. I mean, we're seeing that across the board. So you could ask the same question for a lot of companies.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah.
But I think to put a bow on this episode, we're not going to answer that question.
No.
One, we don't know, and two, we can't.
Yeah. Thanks, ASIC.
To go but full circle, this is where I want to spend my time. I want to spend my time as an investor answering that question or answering the Netflix v. Disney question or probably not spending a lot of time thinking about Masayoshi. But I think that's what's really exciting me as an investor, and I've got sucked into the too much macro thinking.
Yeah, I don't think you need to be down and out about it though. It's worth understanding.
No, you don't want to be down and out about it, but think about us in about halfway through 2021 chatting about how much opportunity there was in March 2020 and how we wish we had deployed more cash into some of those opportunities in March 2020. Don't be that person again.
Don't get me
Take
wrong.
Take the opportunity
Talking about oil prices doesn't mean that I'm not investing in anything.
What are you invested in?
We'll have to take this. We'll have to take this offline.
Yeah. No. Obviously.
You know what
obviously.
I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's just it's important to definitely important to understand. I think.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. West Texas crude closing at $99.50 a barrel. Whatever. Next question. All right, Ren, we'll leave it there. It's been great to chat stocks. If you can please rate and review this episode, pass it on to a friend, recommend it to your colleagues. That would be much appreciated. It's always great to get new people on the journey of investing with us. Thank you for the support as always. Don't forget to buy your FinFest ticket, equitymates.com/FinFest.
And if you do care about all this macro stuff, we do have a business news channel and podcast, The Dive, where we'll be talking about that a little bit more, not in an investing sense, but just in a keeping up to date with what's going on in the world sense. TheDive.businessnews is the handle on Instagram. The Dive podcast in your preferred podcast feed.
That's it.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, check it out. All right. Well, Ren, great to chat stocks as always. We'll pick it up next week.
Sounds good.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of Equity Mates. We love hearing from you. So drop us a line at contact@equitymates.com or even better, go to your podcast player and leave a 5-star review. Also, a reminder that the Equity Mates content train doesn't stop when you've run out of episodes to binge. We've got a brand new website, a Facebook discussion group. We're on Instagram, YouTube, and slowly making our way as an influencer on TikTok. Well, that's Ren. So come and say hello and join the community. We'd love to welcome you. Until next time.
Equity Mates Investing Podcast is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. Equity Mates gives listeners access to information and educational content provided by a range of financial service professionals. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Equity Mates Media does not operate under an Australian financial services license and relies on the exemption available under the Corporations Act 2001 in respect of any information or advice given. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast or video. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website, where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.